Chapter 23. Satan's Grand Ball. Midnight was approaching and they needed to hurry. Margarita saw everything through a haze. She remembered lots of candles and a bejeweled pool. When Margarita stepped into the pool, Hella, assisted by Natasha, doused her in a warm, thick red liquid. Margarita felt a salty taste on her lips and realized that she was being bathed in blood. The crimson shroud was replaced by a thick, clear pink one, and Margarita felt dizzy from the scent of rose oil. Then Margarita was thrown on a crystal couch, and her skin was rubbed with large green leaves until it began to shine. The cat barged in and began to help. He squatted near Margarita's feet and began to rub the soles of her feet as if he were a street shoeshine. Margarita did not remember who made her shoes out of pale rose petals, or how they closed around her feet with golden clasps. Something pulled Margarita up and placed her before a mirror, and a royal diamond crown flashed in her hair. Kuroviov appeared out of nowhere and placed a heavy necklace on her neck, bearing the image of a black poodle in an oval frame. The ornament burdened the queen immensely. The chain began to chafe her neck immediately, and the heavy image pulled her down. Nonetheless, something made up for the unpleasantness caused by the black poodle necklace. It was the deference now extended to her by Kuroviov and Behemoth.
"Alas, alas, alas," Kuroviov muttered as he stood near the entrance of the room with the pool. "Absolutely necessary, nothing we can do. Allow me to give you a final piece of advice, my queen. The guests will be diverse characters, so very diverse, but you can't show anyone your preference, Queen Margot. Even if you don't like someone, I trust you won't show it on your face.
No, no, that would be unthinkable.
They will notice. They will notice at once. You must learn to love them, my queen, love them, and the hostess of the ball will be rewarded 100-fold. One more thing. Don't forget anyone. At least a smile, at least a turn of the head if you cannot find time for words. Anything but lack of attention. They cannot bear it."
Accompanied by Kuroviov and Behemoth, Margarita stepped out of the pool room and into complete darkness.
"Me, me," whispered the cat. "I'll give the signal."
"Do it,"
Kuroviov replied from the dark.
"Ball!"
The cat shrieked piercingly, and Margarita cried out and shut her eyes for several seconds. The ball engulfed her all at once in the form of light, sound and smell. Kuroviov took her under the arm, and Margarita found herself in a tropical forest. Red-breasted, green-tailed parrots perched and hopped on the lianas with deafening screeches of,
"I am delighted!"
But the forest soon ended, its steamy stuffiness giving way to the cool atmosphere of a ballroom with columns made of a yellowish, sparkling stone. Just as the forest before it, the hall was completely empty, save for naked Africans in silver headdresses standing at attention by the columns. Their faces turned greyish-brown with excitement when Margarita flew into the hall with her entourage, which now included Azazello. Here, Kuroviov released Margarita's arm and whispered,
"Straight ahead, towards the tulips."
A low wall of white tulips appeared before Margarita, and beyond it she saw a sea of small shaded lights, full of white shirts and black tailcoats. Margarita finally identified the source of the ballroom sounds. The roar of trumpets came crashing towards her, and then the sound of soaring violins broke through it and washed over her body like blood. An orchestra numbering 150 men was playing a polonaise. A man in a tailcoat towered above the orchestra. Seeing Margarita, he grew pale, smiled, and then with a wave of his hand brought the entire orchestra to its feet. Without missing a beat, the orchestra stood up and its sounds continued to pour over Margarita. The conductor turned away from the orchestra and gave a low bow, spreading his hands broadly to the sides. Smiling, Margarita waved her hand.
Not enough, not enough, Kurovayov whispered. He won't sleep all night. Shout to him, greetings, King of Waltzes.
Margarita shouted it, and was surprised at the strength of her own voice, full as a bell, as it carried over the howling of the orchestra. The man trembled with joy, and pressed his left hand to his heart, even as his right continued to wave to the orchestra with a white baton.
Not enough, not enough, Korofiev kept whispering. Look to the left, at the first violins, and nod, so each man thinks you've recognised him in particular. There are none but world celebrities here. Look over there, at the first stand. It is Vuitton. Very good. Now, let's move on.
Who is the conductor? Margarita asked as she flew off.
Johann Strauss, shouted the cat. And may I be hanged from a liardo in that tropical forest if a finer orchestra has ever played at any ball. I invited it. And note, not a single one declined or called in sick.
The next hall had no columns. Instead, one set of walls was covered in red, pink, and milk-white roses, and the other in Japanese double camellias. Fountains hissed between the walls, and three pools bubbled with champagne. One was transparent violet, one ruby, and one crystal. Africans in crimson headbands dashed around the pools, filling flat cups with champagne using silver ladles. In a large gap in the pink wall, a man in a red swallow-tailed coat was bouncing around on a stage. An unbearably loud jazz band roared before him. As soon as the conductor saw Margarita, he bowed so low that his hands touched the floor, then straightened out and screamed, "Alleluia!" He slapped his knee once, crossed his arms, and slapped the other knee twice, then snatched a cymbal from the hands of the nearest musician and struck it against a column. Flying away, Margarita could see the virtuoso jazzman struggle against the polonaise blowing at Margarita's back, and the musicians crouched in comic terror as he hit them on the heads with his cymbal. Finally, they arrived on the platform, where, as Margarita realized, Kurovayov had first met her in the darkness with his lamp. Now, however, her eyes were being blinded by light pouring from clusters of crystal grapes. Margarita took her place and found a low amethyst column by her left hand.
"You may place your hand on it if you get too tired," whispered Kurovayov.
A dark-skinned man placed a pillow embroidered with a golden poodle at Margarita's feet. Obeying someone's hands, she placed her right foot on it, bending her leg at the knee. Margarita tried to look around. Kurovayov and Azazello were standing behind her in formal poses. Three other young men, vaguely resembling a baton, were standing next to Azazello. Margarita felt a cold breeze coming from behind. Glancing back, she saw wine hissing from a marble wall behind her and collecting in a pool of ice. She felt something warm and furry by her left foot. It was Behemoth. Margarita was standing high up at the head of a grand carpeted staircase that stretched far below. Down there, so far away that she could have been looking through the wrong end of a telescope, Margarita saw a gigantic foyer with a truly enormous fireplace that could have easily fitted a 5-ton track in its cold black mouth. Filled with painfully bright light, the staircase and the foyer were empty. The sounds of the orchestra came from far away. They stood there, motionlessly, for about a minute. "Where are the guests?" Margarita asked Kurovayov.
"They'll come, my queen. They'll come very soon. There'll be no shortage of them. Frankly, I'd rather be chopping wood than receiving them all on this platform."
"Chopping wood?"
the garrulous cat picked up.
"I'd rather be a tram conductor, and that surely is the worst job in the world."
"Everything must be ready in advance, my queen," Kurovayov explained, his broken monocle glinting in the light. "Nothing is more nauseating than watching the first guest to arrive as he wanders about, unsure of what to do, even as his lawfully wedded shrew nags him quietly for having arrived first. Balls like that ought to be banned, my queen."
"Mine's definitely banned,"
confirmed the cat.
"Less than 10 seconds until midnight,"
Korofyov added.
It's about to start.
The 10 seconds seemed extremely long to Margarita. They seemed to pass, yet nothing was happening. But then a crash came from the giant fireplace below, and a gallows leapt out with someone's decaying corpse still dangling on it. The corpse fell from the rope, struck the floor, and became a handsome, dark-haired man in a tailcoat and patent leather shoes. A small, half-rotten coffin ran out of the fireplace. Its lid swung open, and another corpse fell out. The handsome man ran up to it gallantly and offered his bent arm. The second corpse turned into a lively, naked woman in black shoes and with black feathers in her hair, and then both the man and the woman hurried up the staircase.
The first, Korofyov exclaimed. Monsieur Jacques and his spouse. Allow me to introduce a most interesting man, my queen, a known counterfeiter, a traitor to his government, but a very decent alchemist. He is famous, Korofyov whispered in Margarita's ear, for having poisoned the king's mistress. That doesn't happen to everyone, you know. Look how handsome he is.
Her mouth open, the pale Margarita watched the gallows and the coffin disappear in a side passage of the foyer.
I am delighted,
the cat bellowed right in Monsieur Jacques' face as the latter ascended the stairs. Meanwhile, a headless corpse with one arm missing appeared from the fireplace, struck the floor, and turned into a man in a tailcoat. Pale with excitement, Monsieur Jacques' spouse was already kneeling on one knee before Margarita and kissing Margarita's knee.
Ma queen, muttered Monsieur Jacques' spouse.
The queen is delighted,
shouted Korofyov.
Ma queen, the handsome Monsieur Jacques said quietly.
We are delighted,
wailed the cat. Smiling lifeless yet friendly smiles, the young men accompanying Azazello were already prodding Monsieur Jacques and his spouse aside towards the cups of champagne held by the Africans. The solitary man in tails was running up the steps.
Earl Robert, Korofyov whispered to Margarita. Interesting as ever. Note how amusing, my queen, the reverse case. This one was a lover of the queen and poisoned his wife.
We are pleased, Earl,
Behemoth cried. One after another, three coffins fell out of the fireplace, each bursting and falling apart. A man in a dark mantle walked out and was promptly knifed in the back by the man following him out of the black hole. A muffled cry came from below. An almost fully decayed corpse ran out of the fireplace. Margarita shut her eyes, and then someone held a bottle of white smelling salts to her nose. Margarita thought she'd recognized Natasha's hand. The staircase began to fill up. There was now a man in tails on every step, seemingly identical to every other in the distance, and a naked woman beside each, distinguished only by the colour of her shoes and the feathers in her hair. A thin, modest woman, with humbly downcast eyes, hobbled towards Margarita, wearing a strange wooden boot on her left leg and a wide green band across her neck. Who's the green one? Margarita asked reflexively.
A most charming and respectable lady, Korofyov whispered. Allow me to introduce Madame Tofana. She was quite popular among charming young Neapolitan women, as well as the ladies of Palermo, particularly those who had grown weary of their husbands. It can happen, my queen, that one grows weary of one's husband.
Yes, Margarita replied in a hollow voice, even as she smiled at two men who had knelt before her, one after the other, to kiss her knee and her hand.
And so,
Korofyov managed to whisper to Margarita and simultaneously shout,
a glass of champagne, Duke, I am delighted. Yes, and so Madame Tofana sympathised with these poor women and sold them a strange liquid in small bottles. The wife would pour it in her husband's soup, whereupon he would eat it and thank her for her kindness, feeling great all the while. In several hours, however, he would grow quite thirsty and retire to bed. And a day later, the beautiful Neapolitan lady who fed her husband the soup would be free as the breeze in spring.
"What's that on her leg?" Margarita asked, offering her hand tirelessly to the guests who had overtaken the hobbling Madame Tofana on the way up. "And why the green thing on her neck? Is it withered underneath?"
"I am delighted, Prince,"
shouted Korovyov, at the same time whispering to Margarita.
"A lovely neck, but a slight misfortune befell it in prison. That's a Spanish boot on her leg, my queen, and here is the reason for the band. When the prison guards learned that, thanks to her, some 500 ill-chosen husbands had left Naples and Palermo forever, they strangled Madame Tofana in a fit of rage."
"Oh, how happy I am, O Black Queen, that I am afforded this high honour,"
Tofana whispered in a nun-like voice, trying to lower herself to one knee. The Spanish boot restricted her movement. Korovyov and Behemoth helped her rise. "I am glad," Margarita replied, offering her hand to others in the meantime. A steady stream now flowed up the staircase. Margarita stopped noticing what went on in the foyer below. She raised and lowered her hand mechanically, baring her teeth in an identical smile for each guest. The platform was buzzing with guests' voices, and a sea of music flowed from the halls that Margarita had passed through earlier.
"Now, here is a rather boring woman,"
Korofyov no longer whispered, but spoke loudly, knowing that no one would overhear him in the hubbub.
"She loves the balls, always looking for an opportunity to complain about her handkerchief."
Margarita caught sight of the woman Korofyov was pointing to among the ascending crowd. It was a young woman of about 20 years of age, with an incredibly beautiful figure, but with anxious and importunate eyes. "What handkerchief?" asked Margarita.
"There is a maid assigned to her," Korofyov explained. "Every night for 30 years, the maid has placed the handkerchief on her night table. It is there whenever she wakes. She's tried burning it in the furnace and drowning it in the river, but nothing helps."
"What handkerchief?" Margarita whispered, raising and lowering her hand.
"A handkerchief with a blue border. Once, while she was working in a cafe, the owner called her into the cellar. 9 months later, she gave birth to a boy. Carried him off into the woods, stuffed a handkerchief in his throat, and buried him in the earth. At her trial, she said she could not afford to feed the baby."
"But where is the owner of the cafe?" Margarita asked.
"My queen,"
the cat screeched suddenly from below.
"Allow me to ask, what does the owner have to do with anything? It was not he who suffocated the infant in the woods."
Without ceasing to smile and wave her right hand, Margarita dug the sharp nails of her left into Behemoth's ear and whispered, "If you ever interrupt the conversation again, you bastard." Behemoth squeaked in a manner decidedly unbecoming at a ball and gasped,
"My queen, the ear will get swollen. Why spoil the ball with a swollen ear? I was speaking legally, from a legal point of view. I'll be quiet! From this moment on, consider me a fish, not a cat, but please let go of the ear."
Margarita released the ear, and the woman's gloomy, importunate eyes appeared before her.
"I am happy to be invited to the great ball of the full moon, Mistress Queen."
"And I," Margarita replied, "am glad to see you. Very glad. Do you like champagne?"
"What are you doing, my queen?"
Korofyov screamed desperately but noiselessly in Margarita's ear.
"There'll be an awful jam."
"I love it,"
the woman said imploringly, and then began to repeat mechanically, "Frida, Frida, Frida, my name is Frida, O queen." "Then get drunk tonight, Frida, and think of nothing else," said Margarita. Frida stretched out both her hands towards Margarita, but Korovyov and Behemoth took her deftly under the arms, and she vanished in the crowd. A solid wall of people was now storming Margarita's platform from below. Nude female bodies rose among the tailcoats of the men. Tan and pale and coffee-coloured and black, they floated towards Margarita. The intense downpour of light made the precious stones play and dance and sparkle in hair red and black and chestnut and light as flax. And diamond studs shone on the chests of the men as if someone had splashed them with droplets of light.
Every second now, Margarita felt lips touch her knee. Every second she would stretch out her hand for a kiss. Her face stiffened into a frozen mask of welcoming.
"I am delighted," Kurovyov sang monotonously. "We are delighted. The Queen is delighted. The Queen is delighted,"
Azazello intoned nasally behind her back.
"I am delighted," shrieked the cat.
"The Marquise," muttered Kurovyov. "She poisoned her father, two brothers, and two sisters because of the inheritance. The Queen is delighted. Madame Minkina, how pretty she looks. A little nervous, though. Why burn the maid's face with curling irons? Of course one is liable to get murdered after that. The Queen is delighted. A moment of your attention, my Queen. The Emperor Rudolf, a sorcerer and an alchemist. Another alchemist. Hanged. Ah, there she is. What a lovely brothel she kept in Strasbourg. We are delighted. Next, a Moscow dressmaker who we love for her inexhaustible imagination. She kept a shop and thought up a terribly funny thing. She drilled two holes in the fitting room wall.
Did the ladies know? Asked Margarita.
Every single one, my queen, replied Kurovyov. I am delighted. This 20-year-old boy had strange ideas since childhood, an eccentric and a dreamer. A girl fell in love with him, and he went and sold her into prostitution.
A river flowed from below, with no end in sight. Its source, the giant fireplace, kept feeding it. An hour went by, and then another. Margarita noticed that the chain on her neck was growing heavier. Something odd happened to her hand. Margarita could no longer lift it without wincing. Kurovyov's curious observations ceased to amuse her. All the faces looked alike and sometimes blurred together, black and white and slant-eyed mongoloid, and the air between them seemed to quiver and run. A sharp, needling pain suddenly pierced Margarita's right hand, and clenching her teeth, she placed her elbow on the pedestal. A rustling now came from the halls behind her, like wings beating against walls, and Margarita realized that untold multitudes of guests were dancing there. It even seemed to her that the heavy marble, mosaic, and crystal floors in the wondrous hall were pulsating rhythmically. Neither Gaius Caesar Caligula nor Messalina piqued Margarita's interest. Nor did any of the other kings, dukes, cavaliers, suicides, poisoners, gallows birds, procuresses, jailers, cheats, executioners, informants, traitors, madmen, sleuths, or seducers. Their names became jumbled in her head. The faces merged into one giant ball, and only one face lingered painfully in her memory, framed by a truly fiery beard, that of Malyuta Skuratov. Margarita's legs were buckling, and every moment she risked breaking into tears. The worst pain came from her right knee that everyone had been kissing. It became blue and swollen, even though Natasha's hand appeared several times and wiped it with a sponge soaked in some fragrant substance. At the end of the third hour, Margarita glanced downwards with utterly hopeless eyes and gave a happy start. The flow of guests was thinning.
"Balls are the same everywhere, my queen," Kurovyov whispered. "The wave will subside momentarily. We have to endure but a few more minutes, I swear. Here comes a group of Brocken revellers. They always show up last. Yes, it's them. Two drunken vampires. Is that all? Oh, no, one more. No, two!"
The last two guests were climbing up the staircase.
"Oh, this one's new,"
Kurovyov said, squinting through his monocle.
"Oh, yes, yes. Azazello once visited him over a drink of cognac and advised him how to get rid of a man he feared would expose him. And so he ordered his friend, who was indebted to him, to spray the victim's office walls with poison."
"What is his name?" asked Margarita.
"Why, to be honest, I do not yet know," Kurovyov replied. "I'll have to ask Azazello."
"Who's that with him?"
"That is the man who so helpfully carried out his order. I am delighted,"
Kurovyov shouted to the last two. The staircase grew empty. They waited a while longer, to be sure,
but no one else emerged from the fireplace. A second later, without knowing how she got there, Margarita found herself back in the small room with the pool. She burst into tears instantly from the pain in her arm and leg and fell right to the floor. Comforting her, Hella and Natasha dragged her again under the bloody shower, massaged her body, and Margarita reawakened.
"More, more, Queen Margot," whispered Korovyov, appearing beside her. "We must fly through the hall so the honoured guests do not feel neglected."
And once more, Margarita flew out of the room with the pool. On the stage, surrounded by the wall of tulips, a simian jazz band now raged instead of the Waltz King's orchestra. Holding a trumpet in his hand, a giant gorilla with shaggy sideburns stomped heavily as he conducted the orchestra. Arranged in a row, orangutans blew on shiny brass. Merry chimps with harmonicas sat on their shoulders. Two baboons with lion-like manes were playing grand pianos, only no one could hear them amid the roaring and squealing and crashing of saxophones, violins and drums in the hands of gibbons, mandrills and marmosets. On the mirrored dance floor, countless couples spun round as one, in the same direction, amazingly agile and clean in their movement, threatening to sweep away anything in their path. Live satin butterflies fluttered above the dancing hordes, flowers rained from the ceiling. Each time the electric lights dimmed, myriads of fireflies would light up in the capitals of the columns, and marsh lights would float through the air. Then Margarita found herself near an enormous pool surrounded by columns. A giant black statue of Neptune was spewing a broad pink stream from its mouth. An intoxicating scent of champagne rose from the pool. Unrestrained merriment reigned here. Laughing, the ladies threw off their shoes and handed their handbags to their escorts or to the Africans who were running around with towels in their hands. With a shout, the women performed swallow dives into the pool and foamy columns of liquid shot up in the air. The crystal bottom of the pool was lit from below. Penetrating the thick wine, the light illuminated the silvery bodies swimming through it. Everyone left the pool completely drunk. Laughter rang and thundered under the columns as in a bathhouse. Only a single, completely drunk female face stood out from the mayhem, its senseless yet pleading eyes evoking one word. "Frida!" Margarita's head began to spin from the alcoholic fumes, and she was about to leave when the cat pulled a stunt that delayed her a few moments longer. Behemoth worked his magic on Neptune's mouth, and the rolling mass of champagne quickly drained from the pool with loud hissing and roaring. Instead of the sparkling, playful wine, Neptune began to disgorge a dark yellow liquid. Screaming and hollering, "Cognac!" the ladies dashed away from the pool to the safety of the columns. In several seconds, the pool was refilled. Spinning three times in midair, the cat tumbled into the rolling waves of cognac. He climbed out snorting, his bow tie limp, the gilding from his whiskers gone, and his opera glasses likewise missing. Only one woman dared follow Behemoth's lead. The clever dressmaker from before, along with her escort, an unknown young mulatto. They both dived into the cognac, but then Korovyov took Margarita under the arm and they left the bathers. Margarita thought she saw mountains of oysters in vast stone basins float by underneath. Afterwards, she flew over a glass floor with rows of infernal furnaces burning underneath it, diabolical chefs in white garments dashing between them. Thoroughly disoriented, she saw dark dungeons lit by dim lamps, where girls served meat sizzling on hot coals, where everyone drank to her health from large mugs. She saw polar bears playing harmonicas and dancing a Russian dance on a stage, a salamander magician who could not be harmed by fire. And for the second time, her strength began to wane.
"One last exit," Korovyov whispered anxiously, "and we are free."
Escorted by Korovyov, Margarita returned to the ballroom.
The dancing had stopped, however, and the immense crowd of guests had gathered by the columns, leaving the centre of the hall empty. Margarita did not remember who helped her onto the platform that appeared in the empty space. As soon as she ascended it, she heard a clock somewhere strike midnight, even though midnight had long since passed by her estimation. At the last stroke of the clock, silence fell upon the crowd. Then Margarita saw Volant again. He walked, surrounded by Abaddon, Azazello, and several dark young men resembling Abaddon. Margarita saw that another platform had been prepared for Volant opposite her own, but he did not make use of it. Margarita was astounded that Volant had made this last great appearance at the ball looking exactly as he had looked in the bedroom. The same dirty, patched shirt hung on his shoulders, and worn bedroom slippers were on his feet. Volant had an unsheathed sword, but he leaned on it as if it were a cane. Limping, Volant stopped near his platform, and Azazello appeared immediately before him, carrying a tray. The tray bore a severed human head, with its front teeth knocked out. The silence continued, interrupted only by a distant ringing that sounded like a doorbell, somewhat puzzling under the circumstances.
"Mikhail Alexandrovich," Volant said quietly to the head.
The dead man's eyelids opened, and Margarita shuddered when she saw that the dead face had living eyes full of consciousness and suffering.
"It all came true, did it not?"
Volant continued, looking into the eyes.
"You were decapitated by a woman. The meeting never happened. And I am living in your apartment. These are facts. And a fact is the most stubborn thing in the world. But now let us concern ourselves with what happens next, not with some long-accomplished fact. You have always been a zealous proponent of the theory that upon removal of the head, all life ceases in a man, that he turns to dust and vanishes into the void. I am glad to inform you here, in the company of my guests, even though they serve as proof of a wholly different theory, that your opinions are both clever and well-founded. One theory is as good as another, however. For instance, there is a theory that everyone shall receive exactly what he believes in. Let it be so. You will depart into non-existence, while I will happily drink to the joy of existence from the fine cup you will make.
Volant raised his sword. The flesh of the head blackened and fell away in pieces. The eyes vanished, and soon Margarita saw a yellowish skull on a golden stand with emeralds for eyes and pearls for teeth. The top of the skull swung open on a hinge.
"One moment, Messiah,"
said Korovyov, catching Volant's inquisitive glance.
"He will appear before you presently. I can hear the creaking of his polished shoes in this deathly silence. I can hear the ringing of the glass he has just set down on the table, having drunk the last champagne of his life. Here he is."
A lone new guest stepped into the hall and headed towards Volant. Outwardly, he looked no different from the numerous other male guests, except for one thing. Even from far away, he was visibly shaking with agitation. Red spots burned on his cheeks, and his eyes darted around in alarm. The guest was, quite naturally, dumbfounded. Everything he saw shocked him, and particularly Volant's dress. However, the guest was received with the utmost courtesy.
"My dearest Baron Magl," Volant said, smiling amiably to the guest, whose eyes were practically popping out of his head. "Allow me to introduce," Volant turned to the other guests, "the most esteemed Baron Magl, a member of the Entertainment Commission, responsible for introducing foreign visitors to the capital."
Margarita froze, for she had recognized Magl. She had seen him in several Moscow theatres and restaurants. "Hold on," thought Margarita. Has he died too, then? But her question was resolved straight away.
This dear Baron, Voland continued, smiling happily, was so charming as to call me as soon as he heard of my arrival in Moscow, offering his services with regard to his speciality, that is, showing me the local sights. Naturally, I was happy to invite him here.
Margarita noticed that Azazello had passed the tray with the skull to Kurofiov.
Oh, by the way, Baron, Voland suddenly said, lowering his voice intimately, I have heard rumours of your incredible curiosity. They say that coupled with your equally impressive talkativeness, it has begun to attract quite a bit of attention. Moreover, wicked tongues have already let slip the words stool pigeon and spy. And finally, there are speculations that all of this will lead you to a most unfortunate demise no more than a month from now. Thus, to save you all this torturous waiting, we have decided to come to your aid, taking advantage of the fact that you invited yourself here with the explicit purpose of eavesdropping and spying as much as possible.
The Baron grew paler than a baton, who was exceptionally pale by nature. And then something odd happened. Abaddon stood in front of the Baron and removed his glasses for an instant. At the same time, a flash and a soft clap came from Azazello's hand, and the Baron began to fall over backwards, crimson blood spraying from his chest onto his starched shirt and waistcoat. Kurovyov filled the cup from the pulsating stream and handed it to Volant. The Baron's lifeless body was already lying on the ground.
I drink your health, ladies and gentlemen, Volant said softly and raised the cup to his lips.
A metamorphosis took place. The patched shirt and worn slippers vanished, and Volant appeared in a black chlamys with a steel sword on his hip. He quickly approached Margarita, raised the cup, and ordered,
Drink.
Margarita grew dizzy and swayed, but the cup was already at her lips, and voices she did not recognize whispered in both her ears.
Don't be afraid, my queen. Do not be afraid, my queen. The blood has long since vanished in the earth, and grapevines grow where it was spilt.
Without opening her eyes, Margarita took a drink. A sweet current ran down her veins, and her ears started ringing. She thought she heard the deafening crowing of roosters and a distant march. The crowd of guests began to lose its form. The men and women turned to dust. Decay took over their bodies before Margarita's eyes, and a sepulchral stench began to flow from them. The columns fell apart, the lights extinguished, the halls shrank, and the fountains disappeared along with the tulips and the camellias. All that remained was all that there had ever been, a modest living room that once belonged to the jeweller's wife, and a strip of light falling from a half-open door. Margarita walked through it.